This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
There's one more element to this I want to get to today. It's what she was diagnosed with, and it's another area that there's a lot of misunderstanding about and misinformation about out there, and a lot of uneducated, uninformed conjecture out there about, quite frankly. That's bipolar. Lindsay Clancy was treated for anxiety and depression for 4 months. After her children died, a Columbia psychiatrist evaluated her for 8 hours and diagnosed bipolar disorder with psychosis, according to her lawsuit. Her defense is built on that diagnosis. Most people hear bipolar and they picture the Hollywood cartoon version of it, if you will. Big mood swings, up one day, down the next. And there are elements to that which might be true, but that's like the simplistic, super surface level of what's going on here. The actual line is a manic episode. Let's help folks understand what that is in plain English, Siobhan.
Yes, please.
Mania has a lot of misunderstanding. People always think it means the happy manic, right? Running through the street naked. Sometimes that happens. I've had when I work mobile crisis, I would be called out. Joe is running down the street naked. Can you come pick him up? I'm like, I may need some police support to catch Naked Joe here, right?
Naked Joe, there he goes again.
Yeah, that was kind of it.
Yeah. I'm a big wheel when I was 6 years old going down the middle of the highway, too. I think I must have been manic.
What? That's a whole other episode, I think, we just found out right there.
Me and my big wheel when I was six, man, we did a lot of crazy shit. Anyway, sorry.
but the thing that people don't understand is that mania can also, it's basically the brain is going too fast. And you can also have extreme irritability. And sometimes people commit crimes because they get so angry. They may be in road rage incidents. And that can be from a manic episode. They're not the happy manic. The other thing about it, you can have mixed episodes where people are experiencing the racing thoughts, some delusional thinking. They may be hearing voices, and they may also be depressed and feeling a tremendous amount of, I can't go on. I should just die. There's something terribly wrong with me. And you can have, in a mixed episode, which this looks a lot like a mixed episode to me, you can have both things happening simultaneously. So she has a lot of energy. I can do the 5K. I can clean my garage. I can do activities with the kids. And then having this crash, which looks very much like major depressive disorder. So you have to really consider, particularly if you start an SSRI, you have to really watch, okay, I've diagnosed depression, but if I see insomnia escalating after we have a week on an antidepressant, an SSRI, we really need to look at, is this mania? And as I said, the brain is sick. It is not operating normally. It is not regulated. So you can see a lot of changes in the person's normal baseline.
How difficult is it to diagnose bipolar? Her psychiatrist testified that she considered bipolar disorder in December of 22 and ruled it out because Clancy had, quote, never had mania. She described what she was looking for: euphoria, very high energy, grandiosity. And then even when it was somewhat suggested, one of the doctors did testify that they had kind of, you know, put it out there as a bit of a suggestion. The initial reaction, pushback from Patrick, if my wife doesn't have it, well, I don't fucking care what you think. This is a doctor, you're not. And I don't care what Lindsay thinks either. She's a doctor, you're not. If someone's observing this, it matters. And there's meaning behind it. But I guess, why did they not get there? Were there not enough questions being asked? Because they're certainly, running the marathon at 2 weeks after giving birth seems kind of like a big red flag.
It's a red flag.
Yeah. I mean, so walk me me through that. When you suspect that someone might have it, is this something where you got to observe for a longer period of time to really get there? And what kind of, I mean, reality is this? I'm not surprised, and I'm not trying to denigrate Patrick for saying my wife doesn't have that. I'm sure that's probably the common reaction from a lot of people and their partners of that's not what they have. But what is it like being the doctor in there when you're suspecting this might be what that is? From suspecting to actually saying and getting there as this is the official diagnosis, and then having the family and the patient understand, here's what you got going on, and this is how it needs to be treated.
Yeah, it's unfortunately difficult for many providers to diagnose. I happen to have a lot of experience with it for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. And it does not present necessarily really florid in the beginning, where you've got the rapid speech and people are talking and coming up with grandiose ideas. It can present more subtly. And this is where spending a lot of time getting to know the person and talking to the family. The red flags for me, if I were listening to Lindsay, the sleep, the getting worse after an SSRI, red flag, 48 hours with zero sleep, no sleep and not feeling particularly tired the next day, mm-hmm. racing thoughts, because that's a classic kind of bipolar. The thoughts go so fast, they can't keep up with them. Mm-hmm. Feeling desperate. And there were a few more things I heard that I thought, the desperation of, I just can't go on. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid I might hurt the children. I'm having bad thoughts, or I'm having horrible thoughts, I think she said. This sounds delusional. Mm-hmm. And that's more than what she was being diagnosed with.
Yeah.
And I would think it should have been picked up on much sooner.
You know, I think that's such a key point. You brought about so many good points that they should have picked up on, Siobhan, because as we're talking about the manic mania part of it and running a 5K a couple weeks after she gave birth and everything, when you look at the arc of her life, I can understand why Patrick would say she's not manic, because she always, I think people mistake tempo.
She's motivated.
She's got a high tempo. You know why I recognize it? Because it's like when we're describing her, it's like I've never been pregnant, but that's the stupid shit I do. I mean, I have this high tempo in life, and so that will present to someone, whether you're, pre-manic and post-manic, like the outward presentation of energy is going to look the same. But those answers, those questions you brought up, Siobhan, those are what are different, because that's where. And so the follow-up question to that is, you've been doing this a very long time, because
it's a very long time.
Yeah. I know, but I didn't want to age you. But how long did it take you to be able to recognize? Because what happens? Every rep you get, like say a manic presentation is a wobble, right? And when you first start doing these things, that wobble you have to see because you don't have experience. It has to be like this. Deviation. How long did it take before you could actually see it like this? You know, what these people missed, like you saw wobbles here that others mm-hmm. weren't. How long does that take to get that they didn't have?
I would say the first week when she reported the Zoloft really impacting her sleep, because we know an SSRI, if somebody has a predisposition to bipolar, you really have to watch giving them an SSRI. You really have to watch that. And if you see an escalation of symptoms, more racing thoughts, the lack of sleep, at that point, a doctor needed to be thinking about, is there a differential diagnosis possibly with a bipolar spectrum disorder going on here? And the other thing is, her high level of functioning for many years, could have been early bipolar, but we would call it bipolar 2, which means it's not as severe and the person is not having delusions and hallucinations. And it could be that with the pregnancy, the stress, the hormone levels. I mean, I have seen people go bipolar who had no previous symptoms, but have a horrendous bipolar episode in boot camp, which is very stressful. And that can happen. Yes, you'll see a lot of that.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Explain. Yeah. You just had my eyes. Joe. So I was company commander of Marine Corps boot camp at Parris Island. And yeah, we had a lot of amazing mental health issues going on down
I'll
there.
I'll bet. So. Yeah, because people are kept up, they lose stress. Sleep, and the stress is incredibly high because, of course, you want to make sure that in a battle zone that they're not going to, you know, have a bipolar episode.
Keep functioning, right.
Yeah, yeah. But it really happens in boot camp a lot.
I mean, how often is it that people go for good chunks of their life being bipolar or in bipolar two, or I don't know if there's a stage leading up to that too, but where they go for a long ways in that realm and function maybe in very incredible ways,
yeah,
because
yeah.
I can see how it can almost be a superpower in some ways.
Yes.
Until they can't, basically, until something happens, an event happens that makes it, okay, this is no longer a superpower. This is becoming a detriment. How common is this where it goes on for that long until it can't? And it's not like, you know, maybe they're well into life.
Yeah. Yeah, it. I think many people go their entire lives and are never diagnosed. And these are the people that are often, we reward hypomania. The person that's super productive, they don't take days off. They're working all the time. They work late. They work on holidays. And it's like, look what they're doing. And that can be hypomania. They may have episodes of depression. But they don't get delusional and the hallucinations that really put them into the bipolar one category, which is the more severe.
Is that a difficult one to diagnose? Because it can also present as other things as well. Like what differentiates that from other personality disorders or other things of that nature that could be affecting in those sort of ways?
Yeah, those are the ones you really have to observe over time and look for patterns. And it's like, if I hear of somebody working 12, 14-hour days, 7 days a week, working through holidays, they may be a therapist, right? But
or me.
Or Tony. I thought of you. Yeah, I thought of you.
Asking for a friend.
Yeah. But
you all have no idea how much he does. No shit.
I believe it.
He's a nutter.
Yeah. But when you see it impairing their lives, when it's impacting them in negative ways, I think clinicians need to look closer for possible bipolar disorder. I do think it's missed.
That's why we have Siobhan on staff.
Exactly. Got a question? Think something might be wrong? Call Siobhan. But no, I mean it's fascinating, and it's one that is clearly. Not super well understood. And I get, I don't expect the general public to very well understand these things. It's not, especially if you're not seeing them on a daily basis. To close it out, Siobhan, you've been watching this trial. I mean, you've been emailing back and forth, and we both are like, oh my God, wanting to wring some necks as we're watching
this.
And
check out her Substack too. Yeah. She's got lots of info she's been putting out, by the way.
Yes, and that link is on our Substack. What do you want people to walk away with here understanding about the Lindsey Clancy trial at the end of the day, regardless of what 18 people decide about her fate?
I think people need to understand what they don't know and be open to new information. Because if you just listen to the testimony, throughout the whole thing, we haven't even heard the defense witnesses yet.
Mm-hmm.
But you can learn a lot and use your thinking brain. Don't go into your amygdala where it's just about, I want to punish. Be open to new information. Analyze it. You can do a lot of reading online about bipolar disorder and get out of this conspiracy mentality of just needing to blame. People like conspiracies. It makes them feel important, right? It's like, we've got the information here. And then they pump each other up on the internet. They're doing harm. They're really doing harm. And we want the jury to be analytical, thinking, thoughtful, looking at the evidence. And really, all our lives are going to be better when we do that.
Yeah, without
Stay
a doubt.
Curious.
your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Love for you to weigh in and give them to us right there. Siobhan's books, Nightbird. This is her memoir. I highly recommend checking it out wherever you get books or audiobooks. Also, The Minds of Mass Killers, also available wherever you get books. Go and check those out. Robin's latest, It's Not All About Me. It is available wherever you get books as well and audiobooks. Leave a review on Amazon. All right. Until next time, for Siobhan, for Todd, for Robin, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.